Can I tell you how a little bit weird it is that you were just talking to two electronic women in the same room?
I would have said, okay, Google, but I don't have my Android up.
No, here. But I mean the fact that it's Siri over here and Alexa over here. I feel like you are not that far away from having like some kind of a moon situation.
Oh, no, it's bad. I work in this room 11 hours a night, 4 nights a week, by myself.
With 2 chicks.
And Google. I talk a lot, but
it's going to be like her.
Pretty much, except yeah. I'm having a 4-way.
Wait, does Google count?
I ask Google more stuff. Alexa, what's the capital of Pakistan?
Pakistan's capital city is Islamabad.
See, that's useful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I say, hey, Siri.
Text Ryan, sup.
Which one? Ryan Ebb or Brian Atkins?
Ryan Ebb.
I don't understand.
Fuck you, Ebb.
Alexa, text Ryan for me.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if that worked.
When me and Mike Mann do episodes in here, she always starts.
Really?
Whenever I say, what's up, she'll kick on.
Nothing. Like, what's up with you, Dave?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
I'm sorry. Nothing is up with me. I'm sorry, Dave. I told you I don't appreciate when you talk to me like that. No, I will not talk you off.
So when you go batshit, like, try and do it so, like, at least Dateline or something comes around, because I really kind of want to be on Dateline. Or maybe like 60 Minutes when they talk about how like unhealthy it is to have all these things. And then I'll be like, yeah, dude, I knew that guy that like eschewed his family to spend time in a room with Google.
Well, the thing is I'll do that. Like, I mean, you just witnessed it. I sat yeah. there and talked to Siri for 5 minutes instead of typing into the computer that's right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
If Siri doesn't listen, I'll ask Alexa or Google.
What I would love to see happen, or it would be terrifying, it would be the singularity. If you were talking to Alexa and Siri's like, gets pissed.
Who are you?
Who's Alexa? That'd be the most frightening thing ever.
Awesome.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. There's something funny in the air. There is also something funny seated right across from me. That is Mr. Dave Becella.
That is me.
That's Mr. Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies on Up. There's something funny in the air is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that tagline belongs to, send it off to us in one of the three following ways. You can email your guest to us at moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your answer at us @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and if we choose you, we will shoot you over a hot prize package full of all sorts of stuff. That's a little bit of a hint there.
There may even be two of them.
Yes! Very well done. I think Mr. Dave is on to my charade. Hopefully you are too. There's something funny in the air. It's kind of apropos for this week. 50 Shades of Black hits theaters.
There's nothing funny in the air.
No, it seems about time for one of those movies. And by one of those movies, of course, we mean parody movies, as Damon Wayans seems to be so accustomed to making at this point.
This is kind of an outlet for me to vent a little bit. We're doing our favorite parody and spoof movies, and I haven't seen Ryan's list. But I can assume that the kind of parodies and spoofs we're going to have, they're what parody and spoof movies should be and what they used to be. Whereas now, the Wayans and Seltzer and Friedberg completely destroyed the genre. Because...
yeah, I don't have Meet the Spartans on.
No.
There. It's not that.
Because parody isn't about mocking specific scenes and making a movie out of mocking a dozen different scenes from different movies and stringing them together. It's about a genre.
It's the spirit of a movie.
Yes, the spirit of a genre. And... the ones that I have do that. Most of them are older. There is one newer one. But it's almost a lost form now. Because when you think parody is spoof, that's where the Scary Movies
right.
and 50 Shades of Black and Date Movie and stuff like that all come
Take
out.
Take your pick, yeah.
And They're just taking scenes. And it got really bad when you're spoofing, like, comedies. Like, there was that one that spoofed all the Judd Apatow movies. And it's like, how low are we getting that we're now parodying comedy movies? Like, how does that make sense? We're making comedic takes on comedies.
I have a movie that spoofs comedies, kind of.
Comedies.
They're not, yes, they're not necessarily, no, not a comedy specifically.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, and I do agree. I think it's very, I think it's lazy to.
That's the nicest way to say it.
Yeah. Vampires suck. Like,
yeah.
To take what is popular right now, 50 Shades of Grey is not necessarily as popular now as it ever has been, but in February of last year, that movie came out, and it made some money. So 1 year later, it's almost like the next day, they're like, you know what we ought to do?
And you're just making the same movie, but with jokes.
Pretty
and
much,
that's not
yeah.
what parody and spoofing should be.
No, I mean, anybody can sort of make a joke, but it's when you can play with the same crayons and make it funny as opposed to just taking a situation and putting a joke in there.
Yeah.
A serious situation and putting a jokey joke in there. But seriously, Dave, what is your fifth favorite spoof / parody of all time?
My number five is a little different take on it. It's from 2002, written and directed by Steve Odekirk. It is Kung Pao, Enter the Fist. I really like this. It's so ridiculous. Just thinking of this movie makes me laugh. He took an old kung fu movie. He didn't just parody it. He cut himself into it. It's actually a masterful job from a filmmaking standpoint because he took an old movie and he essentially cut himself into it and added new characters and added new scenes. But it's a perfect spoof of the kung fu genre. Like, it has everything. It has the terrible dubbing and it has a cow that knows kung fu. Like, it's silly. Like, it's ridiculously silly. Ones higher on my list have jokes that you remember years removed.
I mean, this one, you remember the talking fist.
Yes. I don't remember, like, specific jokes.
Right.
But it makes me smile thinking about it. If it's on TV, I can watch 10 minutes of it and brighten my day because it's just so stupid and ridiculous. And I thought it was brilliantly done how he did it. That was enough to make my list. There are some also rans that I probably like more, but I kind of wanted to bring this one up. Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
I'm glad you started with this one. My number five is a parody of 70s martial arts movies as well. Written, directed, and starring all the same dude. It's Steven Chow. It's Kung Fu Hustle from 2004. It's got some other people in there too, but I'm not even going to try and pronounce their names. Chow actually has a couple martial arts comedies to his credit, if not necessarily spoofs, but just comedies. Shaolin Soccer, I actually like quite a bit. It's a mashup of two of my favorite things, kung fu and soccer. If I were going to make a list, which we've talked about from time to time, of my favorite movie-going experiences, this one may actually sneak on there. I don't know if in 2004 people really knew what to expect from this movie. It wasn't necessarily marketed like 50 Shades of Black is, to where you know it's a parody of 50 Shades of Grey. I think Kung Fu Hustle, I'm not sure if people thought it was going to be a straight up kung fu movie or what it was, but I do know the theater was, it was pretty full when I was in there, and people laughed throughout the entirety. Just the sheer absurdity of this movie. Like you had mentioned, you know, the cow that knows kung fu. In this one, it's not quite that bad, but it does have all the tropes of kung fu flicks of the 70s. You've got some kind of gang that's dangerous and they're oppressing the town or the village or whatever. You've got greed thrown in there, the greedy landlord, and then seemingly ordinary people who have extraordinary abilities based off basically what their job is. It allows them to be a badass kung fu master. As funny as it is at times, I think it does actually go a little bit dark at points. To me, it's absolutely made for someone who loves those 70s kung fu flicks and doesn't bat an eye at something like the flying guillotine being an actual usable weapon. If you can buy into that, then I think this movie's for you.
I think it's interesting that both of us, we were kung fu for our fifth one. For my number four, it covers a few things. It's a music biopic from 2007. It is the Jake Kasdan directed, written by Kasdan and Judd Apatow, Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. This is a recent one, but done how I like the parodies done. It's not parodying a specific movie. There aren't scenes from Walk the Line that are duplicated. It's just a biopic of this fictional musician. It's ridiculous. I had very low expectations for this movie. It's really, really good. It's really, really funny. The songs are really, really good. And if you're a fan of music, it's cool to see, like, he goes through the phases of music. And
I love when he meets up with the Beatles.
Yes.
It's tremendous.
Yes, and the cameos, the Beatles specifically, the cameos, Jenna Fischer, the cameos and the music make it worth it. And John C. Reilly's so good. And yeah, it's called Walk Hard. It came out shortly after Walk the Line. Yeah. So in a way,
and he's very much a Johnny Cash character.
Yes, kind of. But it's not a straight direct spoof of Walk the Line. It's a direct spoof of the music genre, the music industry, music biopics for everything. Yeah. So it kind of covers it all. It's really funny and entertaining along the way.
I like this movie a lot. I had trouble because it would have been very easy to do a list of like top five mockumentaries. This isn't really a mockumentary, but I felt like a fake biopic and a mockumentary were very, very close. I didn't want to go down that road because I have some mockumentaries that I love. What We Do in the Shadows absolutely would have been like number one. And actually, it probably wouldn't have been number one. It would have been number two on this list. I didn't want to talk about that. I wanted to kind of leave off all of those movies, but I'm glad you mentioned this because I did like it a lot. I'm not a guy that loves John C. Reilly by any stretch of the imagination, but I did really like this movie. And I do love the fact that so many times in these music biopics, you see like a childhood trauma that kind of scars the character. And I loved that they made Dewey Cox's just so ridiculous.
Cut his brother.
It's great. I pretty much love the movie from start to finish. My number four is a movie that I sort of had to convince myself on. I remember seeing it in the theater and I remember liking it. And it is certainly a parody. It's probably the closest to something like a scary movie that I have on the list. It's a parody of a genre. It's a parody of about 20 years worth of high school movies. It's Not Another Teen Movie from 2001, directed by Joel Gallen, starring Kyler Lee, Chris Evans, young-ass Chris Evans, and Jamie Presley. It was one of Evans' first major roles, and I think he shows some really good comedic timing in this as that stereotypical jock character that you have pretty much in every high school movie. Like I said, it takes down about 20 years worth of teen movies from the Hughes movies of the 80s to the ones from my childhood. As I was a little bit young for those movies, She's All That, Never Been Kissed, stuff like that. And they specifically have characters and references from all those movies right down to the setting is John Hughes High School. So I think it's, this movie was made by people that grew up with those movies and loved those movies and was able to pull either a really old student who's going undercover or the foreign exchange student that's just naked all the time. There's certainly little bits and pieces from all those movies. I love the Molly Ringwald cameo at the end. As far as a standalone comedy, it's certainly not the funniest movie on my list, but I think that it does a great job of lampooning the formulaic high school genre. And for that reason, I think it belongs on the list. It's a movie that I enjoy. I do enjoy, you know, those other movies as well. I mean, I love Pretty in Pink. I love 16 Candles. But I also realize how stereotypical they all are. And this movie does too. And I think it kind of lovingly makes fun of it.
This movie was timed perfectly because you had all the ones in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But then there was that resurgence with She's All That, yeah. Whatever It Takes, You Drive Me Crazy.
The mid to late 90s. And then it was
Can't
right there.
Wait, like, all were right there.
Where you were hitting the early 2000s, too, with, like, yeah. American Pie, like,
that's
late 90s,
American
1999.
Pie was, I forgot that one. Like, yeah. That's a half a dozen right there that all came out within just a few years. I think this paved the way for the ones that I hate.
Certainly.
Like, this one paved the way for date movie and epic movie and stuff, because this was kind of on the nose. This mm-hmm. was way more on the nose than the other ones that I like.
Right.
But with it being one of the first ones, it wasn't as bad. It wasn't until epic movie, date movie, Meet the Spartans, Vampires Suck, that they did a Fast and Furious one. And,
and they're churned out every year after a popular movie comes out. Yeah. So it's like, here's the knockoff version of that. But this, the timing was interesting because we'd had 20 years of these movies. And then I think it was kind of like, all right, enough already. Let's take a look at these things and make fun of them for the things they've been doing for 20 years.
My number three, I'm sticking in music, the music genre. You mentioned doing mockumentaries. This is the mockumentary parody spoof. This is Spinal Tap from 1984. I'm shocked this isn't higher on my list because I absolutely love this movie. And I talked about Kung Pao. Like, yeah, it's funny, but I don't remember. I can quote a thousand things from this movie.
Turning it up to 11.
Yeah. That's in pop culture. People that haven't even seen Spinal Tap know that line. And
they don't know where it's from.
Yeah. My favorite line is when they're reading past album reviews and it's like, Shark Sandwich just had a two-word review. Shit sandwich. They can't say that. Nobody said that. Like, and it's just like, that's such a subtle, and it's a Christopher Guest movie. It's and the cast is so good. The scenarios are so ridiculous and everybody in it's so funny. And it is a classic comedy, not just a classic spoof or parody. It's
funny.
It's one of the greatest comedies of all time. And now, you watch it now, it holds up. Hello, Cleveland. Like, that stuff is funny still. So it's not dated. You relate to those musicians. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of music you're into now. You're familiar with Queen and the hair band. So, like, that makes sense for you. And it's just so funny, and it holds up. And it literally is, like, when it comes to comedies, this is a masterpiece. It's such a brilliant, quotable comedy.
And sort of the other reason I wanted to stay away from mockumentaries is because it would have been hard to leave this one off the list. And then it would have been hard to not have Christopher Guest just hijack my list. Best in Show. I don't know. Is that a parody? Is that a spoof? It's a damn funny movie. They're kind of spoofing culture.
Yeah, they're spoofing like this. Everything Christopher Guest does is spoofing like a niche subculture.
Yeah.
Like, he has one coming out about mascots to Netflix that, like, he's done theater. The folk music one.
Mighty Wind.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Like, everything is such a subgenre that he just goes after. And
they're all hilarious. Oh, yeah. It's probably just because our sense of humor is pretty much is similar, and it's definitely Guestian. I wanted to just leave them all off because it was hard enough trying to narrow it down to five, but I would have been in a real mess had I started letting those ones in. With that being said, you had kind of mentioned that, and you're right, this is Spinal Tap is like one of the all time. Like, if you're going to do a study on what is a comedy, that's one to start with. And my number three is as well. It's from 1980, directed by Jim Abrams and the Zuckers, David and Jerry. It's Airplane, starring Robert Hayes, Julie Haggerty, and Leslie Nielsen. I said that not another teen movie doesn't necessarily stand on its own as a comedy, but this one does. So much so that it didn't immediately come to my mind as a spoof or a parody, but it is absolutely a send-up of that disaster movie genre. The joke writing, it's almost its own language. Much like Christopher Guest has a very unique tone, I think the Zuckers do have their own style, and when you're watching a Zucker movie, you know it. It's almost impossible to mistake. The one-liners in this movie are so
nonstop,
and everybody has a line. Everybody gets the opportunity to
speak jive.
The grandma. It is amazing. This movie, Kareem, hilarious. Yes. Who the hell knew? But it's such a funny movie that, again, our disaster movies nowadays are a little bit different. They're epic. They're CG and all that stuff. But this, like I said, it didn't necessarily come to my mind immediately as a parody. But I mean, if you say comedies, then it's absolutely going to jump to the top of your mind because it is one of the best comedies of all time. You can pop in and watch any 15-minute increment of this movie, and you're going to laugh out loud at least two or three times. Movies nowadays, if you laugh out loud two or three times in the whole damn thing, in the 2 hours and 15 minutes of a Judd Apatow movie, you're doing good. But this movie, it literally, it's just nonstop.
I left this off because I assumed you would have it. When I thought parody movies, this was one of the first ones that came to mind. Because I do think of it as a parody movie, but then when you think about it, what's it parodying? Everything else we've talked about so far is so specific. And I think it's just because disaster movies, like mm-hmm. you said, in the 70s, way different than they are now.
Right.
Like, there was that gap. Disaster movies in the 70s.
Into the 80s.
Not much. There was, you know, in the 90s, they kind of started being these epic
right.
Volcano and right, Dante's Peak and Day After Tomorrow. Like, that's what disaster movies we got. But it's just so funny. When it comes to comedy, like, you need to be quotable. And this, and I think this is even more quotable than Spinal Tap because just so many lines. Everybody has really good jokes in this. And it kind of leads into my number two that also comes from the Zuckers. It's a three-way tie with because I couldn't pick one. My top three were almost Naked Gun, Naked Gun 2.5, and Naked Gun 33 and a third.
As long as you did those in the inverse order, I'd be okay.
I love the Naked Gun movies. Mm-hmm. Leslie Nielsen, who was a great dramatic actor back sure. in the day, and then, you know, he kind of transitioned between these, and I hope Spyhard's not
no.
up on your list because I just spoiled it if so. And I think there was a Dracula one. Yeah.
Dead and Loving It.
But Police Files, these Naked Gun movies are so good, especially the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first one feels like an actual cop movie still.
Right.
Like, there's still a plot. Like, there's still a cop plot with the Kill and the Queen, with Reggie Jackson, mm-hmm. and so many jokes come to mind, and they're so good, they all mix together to me, because I think of stuff, and I...
Yeah, which one was the one where he had the wireless microphone on, and he was taking a leak?
Yes.
I think that was, like, the second one.
The one where he's questioning somebody, and he's like, you're on my nuts. like, there's so many good scenes. My best friend growing up was my friend Zane. We met in the fifth grade, and we would watch these movies. When the new one would come out, we were at the theater seeing it, and that's all we would talk about for the next week. So the Naked Gun movies were huge. I didn't know what Police Files was. I just saw the Naked Gun movie, and that was my introduction to it. This episode was timed for 50 Shades of Black, but you have Angie Tribeca, the Rashida Jones show, just debuted on USA a couple weeks ago, and that's like trying to be a modern day Police Files. It's a spoof kind of show. I haven't watched it, but I can guarantee it's not as good as the Naked Gun movies because they're so good. And Leslie Nielsen was so perfect in these movies. It's a bummer that he's gone because they could have keep making these and I would keep watching them. There's a part of me that fears that they remake them someday because nobody will be able to pull that. Mm-hmm. Nobody will be able to be Frank Drebin like Leslie Nielsen was. And he nailed it. I absolutely love.
And I don't think OJ is getting out anytime soon, so.
You know, honestly, OJ's playing days were kind of done by the time I was paying attention to football. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have this affection for him as this running back. But Hoiberg,
yeah.
whatever his name is in these movies, he's hilarious.
He is.
So when he killed that bitch, I'm like, no! Like, the first thing I thought was,
you
like...
You didn't do it. What are you talking about?
Well, when I first heard that OJ killed his ex-wife, I immediately thought, what if they make more Naked Gun movies? That's how much I cared about these movies, was, what are they going to do?
Forget the fact that people are dead.
Yes, yes. I mean, I was young. I was in sophomore in high school when this all happened. But it was like, you can't just leave his character out. You can't recast him. What are you going to do? And I was crushed by the OJ trial because I wanted more Naked Gun.
I almost feel like the Zuckers would have written it in there that he went to jail for killing
someone. They absolutely would
have.
They absolutely would have. And I feel like they would have cast somebody for one scene that looked nothing like him. They'd have cast like Tiny Lester, which is prison Hoiberg.
Right.
The scene with him on the boat, I believe it was at the beginning of two. It might have been the beginning of one, where he's on the boat and just keeps getting, like, everything's going wrong. I think it might have been the first one. He's so funny in these movies. And it's depressing. not just that he murdered people, but just to see where his life's gone. Because I do have loving memories of OJ from these movies.
I took it to a rough place, but I am, maybe for once in the way we put these together, I'm glad that the Zucker movies just kind of managed to go back to back on our lists. My number two, I'm going to guess it's probably the newest movie on either of our lists. It is from 2009, directed by Scott Sanders, written and starring Michael Jai White. It's Black Dynamite with Tommy Davidson and Byron Mins as well. Nobody in their right mind would laugh at Shaft, but Black Dynamite is daring you not to laugh at him the entire movie. In what seems like it would have been the best part of a Grindhouse trilogy, as much as I love Machete, this is how you make an over-the-top action movie parody. And it parodies all the blaxploitation movies from the 70s. I mean, from Shaft, Superfly, Coffee. Take your pick. They're all in there. From the music cues to the ridiculous plot.
The boom mics and the shot.
Yes. Everything, even like the poorly edited things where the scenes don't necessarily fit together. Black Dynamite starts at probably about a 25 on the crazy scale. And ends up,
it doesn't stop.
No, burying the needle, turning it up to 11, so to speak, by the time you have your kung fu battle against Richard Nixon in the Oval Office at the end. What I love about the movie is most of the blaxploitation movies that this spoofs really kind of take themselves a little bit seriously. They have their moments when you're trying to talk about some trauma that occurred to a young Shaft or to the younger brother of a Superfly or whatever it is. And it's almost melodrama, like their rough and tumble upbringing. What I love about Black Dynamite is he was raised in a house of ill repute and he gets sex forced upon him at a relatively young age. But as he's telling the story, crying as an adult, like young Black Dynamite is like winking at you. He's giving you a thumbs up. Like, I love the fact that it even got, it took it to that level. Not just, you know, the ridiculousness of,
you're going to wake up the rest of the bitches.
Not just the ridiculousness of like the government trying to shrink black guys' Johnsons and how that all comes about. Yeah. It's a hilarious movie. It went on to spawn a comic book and cartoon.
Wanted a sequel. I thought we were getting one.
I was hoping so. I mean, I like the fact that we did get other versions of Black Dynamite. But it's never going to be enough for me. I love that character, and it's the perfect character for Michael Jai White. I mean, he looks like he would be one of those street toughs from a 70s movie, and it's amazing. He does it so well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because I completely forgot. Like, it just skipped my list completely, but I love this movie.
If we can get three Machetes, why can't we get another Black Dynamite?
Yeah, it's so good, and he's so fun, and there's just so many funny parts with all the drug dealers and.
But Black Dynamite, we sell drugs to the community.
My number one, the Zuckers also had something to do with this one, from 1984, Top Secret, starring Val Kilmer. This is a parody of World War II spy movies where Val Kilmer plays a rock and roll superstar who gets embroiled in some spy plot. I watched this as a child and laughed nonstop. Like, this was almost kind of my intro to comedy. I mean, Val Kilmer was huge. And when I was a young kid, this and Real Genius,
yeah.
I watched those movies
all
the time.
Val Kilmer's the funniest guy on the planet.
He was. Val Kilmer was the funniest dude alive. Because this and Real Genius were, like, the first comedies I remember, like, loving. They both would have come out when I was about 5 or 6, and I just remember loving him. My brother had this on VHS, Top Secret. And it was one of those, if nothing was on and I didn't feel like looking for something, I'd throw on Top Secret. It's not as quotable as Airplane. It's not as memorable as Spinal Tap. But it's funny. And it's another one of those, like the first Naked Gun, where it is his own movie. Like, yes, it's spoofing an entire genre, but it stands alone as a movie. And I have a lot of good memories of this movie. And watching it as a wee lad one.
My number one is also a movie that I watched an awful lot as a wee lad.
That's why I left it off my list, because I assumed it would be high on your
list. Yeah, it's real high. It's my number one. My mom used to take me to a local video store, and I remember her suggesting this movie for months because she knew how much I like Star Wars, and she thought I might like this one as well. I took my Star Wars a little seriously for roughly 31 years, and I didn't think there was any way I would be able to like a movie that was spoofing Star Wars, but I finally gave in, and I'm glad I did. I absolutely love Mel Brooks' Spaceballs from 1987, starring Bill Pullman, John Candy, Rick Moranis.
Joan Rivers.
Yeah, Joan Rivers is the voice Michael of Dot Winslow. Matrix as the radar guy. Oh, it's
Combing
Mel
same.
Brooks, of course. As much as I could have had my list hijacked by Christopher Guest, you could easily do 5 Mel Brooks movies.
Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
Young Frankenstein.
Yep. High Anxiety. Silent Movie.
Yeah.
History of the World. Maybe that one's not necessarily a parody or a spoof, but what?
Robin Hood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. We had mentioned the Leslie Nielsen, Dracula, Dead and Loving It. That was Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks is to parody in films what Weird Al is to parody in music. And that is to say, the absolute best in pretty much everything they do is gold. I look today, Mel Brooks is 90 years old. I thought to myself, shit. I love Mel Brooks movies. Why haven't we gotten a new one in a while?
Yeah.
It's because he's 90 freaking years old. But I love all of those. And Blazing Saddles could certainly be. You want to talk about quotable? That could certainly be
Who
number
doesn't
one.
Doesn't laugh thinking about the campfire scene.
Never mind that shit. Here comes Mongo. The recently departed Mongo. Everything I said about Airplane, I think, rings true with this one. The joke writing is amazing. And literally every character in this movie is my favorite. I love them all. Pizza the Hut. Barf. I love them all. I find myself quoting this movie all the time. And the more I watch it, the more I miss Rick Moranis. Dark Helmet is the perfect parody version of Darth Vader. From a visual standpoint, from the way he acts. When we talked about, you know, parody casting of what you might do for OJ, if you were going to parody cast Darth Vader,
it's Rick Moranis.
Of course it's Rick Moranis.
It's from 6'5 British guy.
Yes.
To
5'6 with a little tie on his uniform. Like, it's amazing. And the lines from this one, I mean, I don't even get me started. And the bits, I love the bit where they go to the Spaceballs VHS and they're trying to find the point in the movie where they're at. I love the scene on the bridge with how many assholes we got on this ship. I love the alien parody at the end of the movie with John Hurt playing himself. That movie from start to finish, I love. It's easily top 10 movies for me all time. I love it that much for many of the same reasons you love Top Secret. Maybe it just hits you at that point in life, but it also hits you with really good material.
This would have been high on my list, but I knew it would be on yours, so I figured I'd squeeze something else in there.
Couldn't leave it off.
Yeah, and The Force Awakens coming out. Mel Brooks was talking about doing a sequel. I don't want a sequel because we don't have John Candy. We don't have Joan Rivers.
Right.
Is this what Rick Moranis would come out of retirement for? I don't know. But
you know what? If they did it...
I think he would.
If they did it Force Awakens style, where we don't have Dark Helmet...
Oh, yeah.
We have an old Bill Pullman, an old Daphne Zuniga.
Yeah.
I think that could be...
The Schwartz Awakens.
Yes. The search, the quest for more money, or whatever they said the Spaceballs sequel should be in Spaceballs.
I mean,
that'd be great.
This is so good. And Mel Brooks, I mean, you hit it on the head. We could have narrowed it down to just Zucker's and Mel Brooks and still probably had 10 movies each.
Throw Christopher Guest in there, and it's...
Yeah. When I first suggested the list, I thought Hot Fuzz would be on my list because I didn't think I would actually find enough parody movies that I liked. And Hot Fuzz is what I like about parody movies. It does a genre, but it's still its own standalone movie.
Right.
It's not as wacky as the ones we listed. The same time Black Dynamite came out, another movie came out called Bitch Slap, which was a send-up of like the 70s female-led action movies, which I thought was great. I thought Bitch Slap was fantastic. It's not as quotable as Black Dynamite. It's not as memorable as Black Dynamite, but it's just it's a fun movie. And Hot Shots.
Yeah.
Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part 2, only because... Top Secret was my jam, and you give me about 10 years later, oh, here's a new Top Secret type movie. it wasn't as good. I don't like Charlie Sheen as much as I like Val Kilmer. Although I'll always laugh when I think about the boats passing and Martin Sheen's on one boat and Charlie mm-hmm. Sheen's in, at the same time. I loved you in Wall Street. That'll never not make me laugh. Like, I don't know why, but that's such a stupid gag and such a stupid joke, but it makes me laugh so hard. The Hot Shots movies, they were before parody was dead, so, I mean, right. they still have their moments, but they don't touch Airplane or Top Secret or the Naked Gun movies, so.
I mean, mockumentaries, you know, leaving off. I think we're okay leaving it off because we talk about Leslie Vernon an awful lot.
I thought about that too, but
it would have been hard to have one mockumentary on there and not have that. And What We Do in the Shadows is another one that I love that we've talked about a ton. So there was no reason to put them on this list, and that's why I tried to stay away from those. But it's a shame, as many parody movies as we have now, and they all suck. I think either of us really had problems finding some that are really, really good. So it seems like you know, as many bad ones as we find, there's some pretty good ones too.
Back when we did news episodes, we saw a trailer for one that I don't know whatever happened to this movie, but there was a horror movie came out, Stephen King Must Die or something like that.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
That I don't know what happened to it. It looked fun. The trailer made it look like a good spoof of horror movies and specifically Stephen King movies, but. I mean, I'm willing to consider the genre dead. I really am. I think Seltzer and Friedberg and Wayans killed it. I really do. And I mean, they're all the same because Seltzer and Friedberg, I think, got their start with Scary Movie. So
yeah, they're pretty cookie cutter at this point. As hard as it was for us to narrow down our list for this episode, it'll be similarly hard next week when we've got our list of our five favorite George Clooney movies as Hail Caesar, the new Coen Brothers jam, comes out. So we're going to run down our five fave from
The Clune Prince.
The Clune Prince, one of the handsomest men on the face of the planet, George Clooney. That'll be next week, so come back and see us then. But until then,
keep it up.